141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Conor Barron says Rangers were the only club he wanted to join this summer. Charlie Mulgrew says fans need to show patience in Celtic's goalkeeper hunt, and UEFA defend the non-award of a penalty in Scotland's clash with Hungary. I'm Andrew McLean. Joining me in the studio tonight is Hugh Keevans.
Well, we'll be hearing from Conor Barron pretty soon, and also Rangers add to their backroom staff today with Philippe Clement bringing in a fellow Belgian. So when Rangers are starting to tool up, as it were, for the new season, but the team across the road on the other side of the city haven't done anything yet, that tends to get the Celtic supporters twitchy. Are you, Cole?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday was maybe the day I thought that it was going to tip over. That was when we were going to start talking about domestic football. Then all of a sudden, the UEFA's head of refereeing has come out today defending the decision to not award Scotland a penalty against Hungary. I'm not even sure I want to go back over it, but I think we'll have to at some point.
But I think the penalty, to be honest, I still can't say with 100% certainty that I think it was a penalty. However, there's no point in hanging your hat on a penalty given or not given. The tournament was, from our perspective, very, very poor. And something will have to be done before we begin our Nations League matches against the like of Portugal away.
Let's hear from you. 01419511025. The beauty of these shows is that you can set the agenda. You've got something you want to talk about, give us a call. 01419511025. Rangers fans, you're going to hear from Conor Barron, the first time he's spoken since moving from Aberdeen. I wonder what you make of that. A new assistant manager through the door as well. Charlie Mulgrew has been talking about Celtic's hunt for a goalkeeper. I think there's maybe a few itchy feet people a bit worried that Celtic haven't made any progress yet, or seemingly haven't, in the public eye. But Charlie Mulgrew saying patience is needed when they hunt for that new goalkeeper. UEFA also defending that decision not to award Scotland a penalty against Hungary. So give us a call, 0141 951 1025, or you can send us a tweet at ClydeSSB. There's still so much happening, isn't there? Despite the fact that the Euros are over and we're still a wee bit away. Is it 5 weeks or so now, still away from the start of the domestic season?
But when we exit an international tournament, doesn't matter how we do it, when we exit, it brings club football back into prominence. And I heard one caller, I think on Tuesday night, say that the silence from Celtic Park was deafening. And I thought, well, there you are. That's it started then. I'm not sure that I agree with Charlie Mulgrew when he says that, well, there's no rush. Goalkeeper is a highly sensitive position. The Scottish Cup final was the 25th of May. Joe Hart had announced his retirement well before that cup final. And I think the fans would like to know even who's in the frame to become the Celtic goalkeeper.
Yeah, because I think this is the time that people start to sit up and take notice and really look at the gaps in the squad and think, well, we should have a player in that position. We should have a player in this position. They see their team back in pre-season training. They see them jetting off to different countries, playing friendly matches as well. I see Motherwell are in action tonight. Plenty of other teams have played pre-season friendlies as well. You start looking at the holes in the squad and thinking, right, okay, when are those going to get resolved?
Well, I think the goalkeeping position at Celtic is clearly a very important one. Joe Hart is gone after 3 very good years at Celtic. Benji Sigrist, I take it, will leave the club, and there is no proper number one choice there. Scott Bain, with the greatest respect to him, is not number one choice goalkeeper for Celtic. So it is a very important area of the side.
And also, I wonder, Celtic fans, will they look across the road and see the fact that Rangers are doing a bit of transfer business and they're not? Will that start to worry people a bit? Maybe not worry people, but Celtic fans may start to think, you know, when's our business starting?
The attitude of mind will be, well, Rangers have to rebuild because they're now 3 championships down to Celtic under a variety of managers, and Brendan Rodgers has players there who are simply of a higher quality. But the Celtic fans' area of concern will be, will Matt O'Reilly still be a Celtic player by the time the season kicks off? The goalkeeping position, and for certain they need at least one central defender. Navrotsky and Lagerbielka have been found to be total failures, and they have Cameron Carter-Vickers, and they need at least one for that position.
Well, let's hear from you. 01419511025. Let's start with Jeff, who's in Giffnock. Jeff, what have you got for us tonight?
Good evening, both of you. How are you?
All right, good, Jeff.
A couple of points. How UEFA can defend that Scotland lack of penalty must be a joke. I now begin to wonder if VAR is fit for purpose. Right? My second point.
Well, we'll take that first, Jeff. You know what? Let's hear from UEFA's head of refereeing, Roberto Rossetti. He's been speaking today. He was doing a press conference. He was asked specifically about the Scotland-Hungary game. He says Scotland being denied a penalty against Hungary was the correct decision. He says Stuart Armstrong initiated the contact.
The attacker of Scotland, Armstrong, was in front of Hungarian. If you watch from the behind camera, there was a movement of the attacker towards the Hungarian. So another controversial decision. The referee, of course, the VARs are checking everything, but for the VAR was no intervention because there was in their opinion, you know, the attacker changed the direction towards the defender, and for his opinion was just a physical contact, trying to challenge the defender.
It's an interesting development because I saw some reports overnight that Facundo Teo, who was the referee during the game, that he'd been sent home from the Euros, he wasn't going to take part. But I think he's fourth official for Switzerland's game coming up this weekend, so he is still very much there. So it doesn't look as if he's been, you know, axed or whatever it was. And then all of a sudden, Roberto Rossetti's coming out and defending it, saying that Stuart Armstrong was the one that initiated the contact. He feels it was the correct decision because of that.
To address Jeff's point about he's beginning to wonder whether VAR is fit for purpose.
I think people have been wondering that for a long time before that decision was made.
However, you can't make that comment just because a decision went against your team. And I would remind Jeff that in the game before that against Switzerland, VAR came to Scotland's defence and disallowed goals. So, I repeat, from my perspective, and Jeff is giving his individual opinion as I am about to do, I still can't say with all certainty we was robbed. I'm not sure it was a penalty.
Jeff, what do you make of that explanation that Stuart Armstrong was the one that initiated the contact?
From one of the angles, you saw the Hungarian player with his arm round Armstrong. So how can he initiate the foul? They both went in, the arm went round, and Armstrong was taken down. Now, in some circumstances, I really don't know. I mean, I'm really sort of stuck for words regarding all this. I'll rephrase it. It works for us and it works against us.
Yeah.
But it has to be a constant decision. You can't just not look at it.
But if there's anything we know about VAR, it is that it is not consistent in the eyes of those who feel aggrieved by what's happening. However, VAR, in the words of the SFA president, Mike Mulroney, VAR is here to stay in Scotland 100%. So we'll just have to get on with it.
Roberto Rossetti saying that Stuart Armstrong initiates the contact. Is he not doing what sort of strikers and, you know, forward players are told to do, get across the front of your defender, and then, you know, that there may be contact there? Would it not be a case of Stuart Armstrong having to, in that scenario, have really committed a foul first for the subsequent foul not to be deemed a foul? Because he gets across him, his arm is up. Is that enough to then deny what is a clear knee to the heel, essentially, of Stuart Armstrong?
For what it's worth, I think it's a 50-50. And
do you? 50-50?
Yeah.
You don't think that the contact from the Hungarian Willy Orban is a lot more severe than on Stuart Armstrong?
Well, we've had VAR examine it. We've had Mr. Rossetti there explaining to us why it's not a penalty in his eyes. I honestly think we have to let it go and we have to concentrate on what is the bigger picture, and that is that we were, for the second time in a row at a major international tournament, a a massive disappointment.
Jeff, what was your next point you wanted to make?
Just as it happens, it probably wouldn't have made a difference anyway, because there's one or two clubs that had 4 points didn't get through, so it might not have made a difference anyway. Right, my second point is the Ibrox fiasco regarding the new disabled area in the Copeland Road stand. Surely to goodness, the board, I mean, this could have got the steel from the UK, right? Obviously.
I mean, I think we're venturing into territory that Hugh Evans and myself know absolutely nothing about. We're definitely no construction experts.
Because my brother is in the building trade, right? They could have got the steelwork and brought it into the UK, put it into storage over the towards the end of the season, and they could have had all this done at the...
Well, until John Bennett explains the ins and outs of all of this, then we are shooting in the dark. But first of all, I would say that Rangers, like any other business, are entitled to seek a competitive price for what is, whatever it is they're buying, whether it's a footballer or steel. So, yes, it's very bad for Rangers. It's a very unfortunate development for the players. However, the bigger concern would be if the steel shipment was delayed in any way, at which point Rangers have a very, very serious problem on their hands. Not that it's not serious enough as it is, but Rangers are entitled to seek a competitive price for whatever it is they're buying.
It's amazing the stuff you get into sometimes on this show, the shipment of steel, which is not something I thought I'd ever be talking about on this show. But Jeff, just for the, you know, what sort of impact it may have on the pitch, is that a concern that Rangers may go 2, 3, 4 games where they're having to play away from Ibrox? Do you think that could hinder them in the early stages of the season?
Being at Murrayfield, right? Are we, as a supporter, going to get some sort of compensation for travel expenses to go through to Edinburgh with maybe lowering the ticket prices? Because you're asking for like 3 or 4 games at the beginning of the season. That's a lot of money to fork out if you don't drive a car to get to Murrayfield.
You're right.
Yeah, I think it's a valid question, isn't it? Because, you know, supporters that can go to games at Ibrox in Glasgow, some of them will be travelling from further away to get to, if it is Edinburgh, it's not an easy task for some people. So you'd expect that Rangers will need to think about the supporters.
Having said what I said about Rangers seeking a competitive price in support of the fans, they are entitled to say the season ticket is undervalued because I'm not getting the number of home games that the season ticket says I should be getting. And therefore, inevitably, some are going to seek recompense from the club, and they would have a case.
Jeff, we're going to hear from new Ranger signing Conor Barron shortly on the show. Are you happy with that bit of business?
Yeah. I mean, in the news yesterday with the Aberdeen chairman, I honestly thought it wasn't a done deal the way the Aberdeen chairman was.
I mean, it's definitely a done deal. It just comes down to compensation, essentially. So Aberdeen and Rangers have to agree a compensation fee between them. There are reports that Rangers have offered $525,000 that Aberdeen have knocked back. If the two clubs are unable to agree a compensation fee between the two of them, it then goes to an independent tribunal and they look at different things to do with the fact that Aberdeen offered Conor Barron a contract before he left. They look at, you know, his standing in the game, essentially, that he's a Scotland under 21 international, that he's played European football. These types of things should work in Aberdeen's favour when they are trying to look for a fair fee for Conor Barron.
Yeah, I mean, I would look at it perhaps in simplistic terms, but I would say, so we have a Scotland under 21 international. Rangers want him to be part of the rebuilding of Rangers to challenge Celtic for the title and to make an impact in Europe, but they don't want to pay any more than £500,000 for him. Well, you don't really get people who make a significant difference to your European and domestic ambitions for £500,000 anymore.
Well, thank you very much to Jeff. You can give us a call 01419511025, but you want to keep listening because of this, because it's your chance to win cash with Call Robert just by guessing the results of some of the Euro 2024 games. It's that simple. Last time out on Wednesday, it was Graham and Irvin playing for £800. He went for a Portugal win against Georgia, but as we all know, there was that upset. Georgia took the lead. What was the second minute of the game as well? A really good 2-0 win for them, but not for Graham, because it ruined his chances of winning the money. But it means you can still win the cash, because it rolls over and we've added another £100 to the pot, meaning tonight you're playing for £900 to win. You have to predict the results of the next three games in the knockout stages. They are Switzerland against Italy tomorrow at 5 o'clock, Germany against Denmark tomorrow at 8 o'clock, and then on Sunday, England against Slovakia at 5 o'clock. As an added bonus, we'll get Hugh to give his predictions as well. The season might be over, but we're still getting you to do predictions, Hugh.
Flawless. I think you'll find flawless prediction.
Yeah, we'll put that to the test. We will see. But the lines are open now for your chance to win £900 with Call Robert. Call us right now on 01419511025, and we'll play Pundit Predictor next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Listen and watch. Check the Twitter feed at Clyde SSB. 01419511025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Hugh Keevans here with me, Andrew McLean, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard, the final one of the week. But of course, we'll be back next week bringing you all the latest, whether it's transfers, pre-season friendlies, still reflecting on Scotland, looking ahead to what Steve Clarke and his Scotland side can do. But I'm sure it will be domestic football and transfers that will be on the minds of most, and plenty of stories I'm sure that we won't even have seen coming will crop up as well. But on tonight's show, we've teamed up with Call Robert for our Pundit Predictor. We want you to predict the results of the next three games of Euro 2024. It's that simple, and you can win £900. The games we are picking tonight: Switzerland against Italy, which is tomorrow afternoon, Germany against Denmark on Saturday night, and England against Slovakia on Sunday afternoon. Scott is in Fernhill. He's going to be playing tonight. Scott, how are you?
How are we doing, Andrew?
Yes, all good, all good. How are you feeling? Feeling confident going into this?
Yeah, relatively so, yeah. I think I've got 3-1 us, but we'll see.
Good stuff. Right, we'll get Hugh to do his predictions as well.
I've thought that all of my career.
Yeah, that's a good point. Never worked out that way.
Yeah,
don't follow Hugh's lead. We'll let you pick first, but if Hugh's picked differently from you, then you've probably got a decent chance, yeah, I would say. True. Right, so let's get into them. First of all, Switzerland against Italy.
I fancy a draw, 90 minutes at a draw.
Right, okay, we'll go draw for that one. Hugh?
Italy.
Germany against Denmark.
Germany.
I agree, Germany.
And lastly, England against Slovakia.
Unfortunately, England.
Hugh?
It had better be England, or Gareth and his waistcoat will be parted from the squad soon. it will be England, I think.
Well, there we go. We will see on Monday night whether you are a winner. Scott can become the first winner in 10 days. That actually shows how tough it is, you thought, because I think there's been a couple of nights where it's maybe only been two games that people have predicted, but three. But you know what? I think you've got some decent selections in there. 9 wrong predictions in a row, though. Hopefully that stops over the weekend. That's all thanks to Call Robert. We will find out if Scott has won on Monday. Scott, I know you are a Celtic fan as well. How are you feeling about, I was going to say, Celtic's transfer business so far, but probably lack of transfer business is the better phrase to use.
Yeah, we could be doing with obviously getting a goalkeeper in, but hopefully they're on that. Could do with another centre-half. And maybe, I mean, if we're going to lose all, we could probably be doing with getting another striker as well. Obviously, Matt Riley probably will leave, so we might have to bring in somebody there as well. As long as we bring in quality and not quantity.
Exactly. That was the failing of the last two transfer windows, one project after another, leading to a situation where Celtic played Rangers in the cup final and not one of the signings in the two previous transfer windows was in the starting 11. So that tells you just how bad they were. Adam Ida, talks ongoing. The complication there, Norwich were a new manager and he reserves the right to have a look at Adam Ida. So I think Ida could be last day of the transfer window, perhaps.
Are you feeling quite relaxed, Scott? The team are back in pre-season training in the last couple of days. They'll be heading off to America in a couple of weeks. Are you quite confident that Brendan Rodgers will be able to get the bodies through the door that he's looking for?
Yeah, I think Brendan knows he wants quality this time and not quantity. And I think we've got the money there. Obviously, I would still like us to go and spend the money in Miosky. But it's between him and Ida. It's a coin toss. If it was between the two of them, I would take either of them.
There's an emotional pull towards Adam Ida because of the important goals he scored in the run-up to the league title win. And then, of course, he scores the goal that wins the cup. So I think there's an emotional pull towards him. But Miovsky, you know, again, Aberdeen are going to drive a hard bargain here. And understandably so.
Yeah.
But I think Celtic's first inclination would be Adam Ida.
Scott, you mentioned that centre-back area. You're looking for incomings. Is there going to need to be some outgoings as well? Because Cameron Carter-Vickers, you would think, is the nailed-on starter out of the players that are there. There's then Liam Scales, Stephen Welsh, Gustav Lagerbielka, Mike Navrotsky as well. Is there going to have to be movement out?
If we can get Lagerbielka, which will probably happen if that Italian team comes back in for him. Did you see the rumours about Starfelt possibly coming back? I mean, that I would take that in a heartbeat if it was true, but We'll wait and see, but that is a position we certainly need to fill, is the left side of the centre-back.
There's a danger, you know, so many players there who have absolutely no future at Celtic, and the club have to offload them because...
Yeah, would you expect plenty? I mean, Sead Haksabanovic left a couple of days ago for Malmo. Would you expect that is the start of an exodus, really, that there is going to be quite a lot of players going?
Brendan Rodgers can't have the place cluttered up. You know, it disrupts training. And it's not what he requires, so there'll have to be a car boot sale.
Well, let's hear a bit from former Celtic defender Charlie McGrew, shall we? He says he isn't surprised Celtic haven't signed a goalkeeper yet. He thinks it's important they take time over big decisions.
I'm not surprised it's not happening now, because you can't rush these decisions. You've seen me Barkas a few years ago. It didn't work out. Nobody's fault, just sometimes you don't settle. I wouldn't be surprised if he's flying now and he's playing well and he's a good goalkeeper, just never settled, it wasn't meant for him. So it's really hard to rush these decisions and make them quickly. You have to take your time and make sure, do background checks, and I'm sure there'll be other clubs that are interested in these goalkeepers, so you need to probably wait till later on to kind of, you get agents and clubs waiting for more money or looking for bigger moves, and it's there's more to it than just going out and grabbing a player and bringing them in. The same fans would be right on the keeper's back if he was terrible, even though he was signed early. So you need to kind of, it's up to the club. Of course fans want players in the door, they want a goalkeeper in the door, they want a number one, but I think as a club you need to be patient and make sure you get the decision right.
If Barkas has turned into a right good goalkeeper, it's a miraculous transformation.
I think he actually got some okay reviews when he went back over to Holland after he'd played.
Well, when he played at Celtic, I thought among the very worst goalkeepers I've ever seen. But anyway, I go back to the basic point that, you know, Joe Hart, it has been known for quite some time that Joe would not be there at the start of the season. And I'm slightly surprised that there hasn't been more evidence, and I will use that word, evidence of movement. For all I know, there's a goalkeeper sitting up at Lennox Town right now signing a contract. But if there is, Celtic have kept it very, very quiet.
Yeah, that's it. You can never tell. Sometimes more progress will have been made than you think. Sometimes it's the other way around. But with, 5 weeks and a couple of days, I suppose it is, until Celtic play their first competitive game of the season, there still is plenty of time for them to get
absolutely
in. But would you expect that, you know, with Celtic going away to America and pre-season training in a couple of weeks, I think it is, that should that really be, you know, the time they're aiming for to make sure the goalkeeper is in for then? So he's going away with the squad, he's got time to settle in ahead of that.
I would think that's a must. You know, there can't be this assumption that, oh, we'll just start the season and Scott Bain will be in goal and we'll get one eventually. I know there's been all manner of complications because Croatia's goalkeeper, for example, has been connected with Celtic, and the rumours from Turkey were that Jose Mourinho had sanctioned the goalkeeper's exit from the club.
I think there had been sort of further reports from Croatia, sort of well-connected Croatian journalists, saying that he didn't feel there was much in those reports, that he didn't think there was a deal that had been struck or any talks between Celtic and Fenerbahce and Dominic Livakovic.
Well, this is the way the transfer window operates. We shall see. But I do think that whether it's a goalkeeper and or a centre-back, I do think it would be preferable if they were to accompany Celtic to the USA and begin the work for the new season, and others besides, because it, you know, it's not as simple as a goalkeeper and a centre-back. Celtic, although they are the champions, although they are going for four in a row, the fans know that there are other requirements there.
01419511025. Let's speak to Charlie, who's in Greenock. Charlie, what have you got for us tonight?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
All good.
I was listening to show earlier on, and kind of it was about the refereeing decisions in the World Euros there, and not getting a penalty kick. I'm actually, obviously, from a Scotland point of view, I'm kind of disappointed, but more disappointed in the performance rather than this specific incident, because I didn't think it was a penalty.
You didn't think it was a penalty, no?
No, I've seen too many situations last season where I've been up off the couch shouting at the telly, you know, and especially as a Celtic fan, I've seen Rangers doing it, I don't know how many times, in Tavernier in particular, where he's just throwing his leg, you throw the leg across the oncoming defender, just throwing his leg across, just looking for a penalty kick, and by and large they get it. I don't know how many penalties they got out of it last season.
I don't know how many penalties James Tavernier personally won for Rangers last season. I don't think it was many, was it? But Charlie's managed to do what we do well in this country and managed to twist something that's not related to Celtic and Rangers at all into a Celtic-Rangers debate. But, I mean, Charlie's broader point is that he feels that, you know, Stuart Armstrong was playing for the penalty.
Charlie will have to live with the fact that I agree with him. Therefore, Charlie's...
That's never a good place to be, Charlie.
No, Charlie's pals are now laughing. You must be some judge if Hugh Keevans agreed with you. But, as I say, I can't convince myself it's a penalty. And, you know, the basic point is, we're going to go on and on and on about this. If we had gone through, we'd have met somebody who'd have given us what Germany gave us, because we were having a dreadful
tournament. Yeah, but you can't think like that, though. You can't think, there's no point in getting through, though, because we might just get hammered in the next round. We'd have been the first Scotland team to ever get through to the knockout stages of a tournament, and then you're going to pour cold water on the whole thing because, we would have got hammered anyway. Surely you could enjoy getting through no matter what circumstances you get through in.
Have you watched me make a living?
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. Yep. Charlie, you said that, you know, you were disappointed in the Scotland performances overall. What were you looking for that you didn't see from Steve Clarke's side? What needs to change going forward?
I was looking for not so much effort. I was looking for a fight. You know, a desire to actually win a game. It's all down to your ambition, and if you've got a glass ceiling on ambition and what your beliefs are. Do you believe you can go out and compete? And if you don't believe that, then you're as well just staying in the dressing room. And I don't know whether it was Steve. I'm sure it had to be. I like Steve Clarke, but his tactics are rotten. So many decisions, and bringing a double substitution in the Switzerland game at 8-9 minutes and stuff like that. What's going on here? What's the point? What even is the point in that?
I think that, Charlie, by the end of the game against Hungary, I think he had lost the place. All manner of questionable decisions were being made. And I'll go back to it. Lewis Morgan, who wasn't even in the original squad, gets on before Forrest, who had a terrific end to the season with Celtic and had been instrumental in helping them get across the line in the league title race. And I think by the end of the game against Hungary, he wasn't, for me, making decisions that you could understand.
Because players were being thrown on in different positions and the shape was having to change and, you know, players were tiring and had to be taken off. But it got to the point where it was a back four. Kenny McLean had to be slotted in at left back. It kind of looked all over the place. Scotland were having to go, you know, gung-ho as well. It just looked all a bit disjointed, towards the end.
I was back here while you and the guys were in Germany, and on the night of the Switzerland game, the fan reaction was terrific because they said, effort. We came to see effort and got it against Switzerland. But in the game against Germany and Hungary, Charlie's right. The manager looks risk averse and we don't look combative. We did against Switzerland, went toe-to-toe with them, but in game one and game three, we were not at the races.
Was that the big surprise, Charlie, that things looked promising in that middle game against Switzerland, a game that Scotland could have even won if things had gone differently. But playing more on the front foot, having a go at Switzerland, we've seen other teams, you know, smaller nations in the tournament that have played like that, a bit fearless, and it's been, you know, they've got results out of it that it seemed to regress in the Hungary game again and went back to a more sort of neutral, maybe more defensive style than we'd seen a few days earlier.
Listen, see, after we scored against Switzerland, the hammer just, they were banging it a door and banging it a door and banging it a door, and a draw suited them. We were lucky to get out yet one each. That's what I think against Switzerland. I know people celebrating a draw. No, not for me. That wasn't good enough. Sorry to interrupt there, but 89 minutes, bringing on two guys in 89 minutes. The game was yet to be won. If we thought we were competing against, if you thought we were competing against them, why not go for the kill?
Yeah, exactly. Charlie's spot on. You know, we keep going on about must-win games. Here we had the definition of a must-win game, and we didn't try to win it. I just found it utterly baffling.
There was a lot of talk about Scotland having to learn lessons from the last Euros. Did it seem that way at all? Did we learn any lessons? Because it kind of played out exactly the same. And does that concern you going forward, that if the lessons weren't learned between those two major tournaments, that Scotland with big games coming up in the Nations League, are the lessons from that tournament just there going to be learned going into these big games coming up?
Are we convinced that we have the man who should be delivering advice on the lessons learned? That's the first thing to be established. And I look at Poland, Portugal, Croatia, and I don't like the look of it. We would have to undergo a sizable transformation in technique and in mentality before those games, because they're coming along like a bad accident.
Well, thank you to Charlie. Still plenty of time to get involved. Give us a call, 0141 951 1025, and you can be up next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Hear it. Watch it. Search the YouTube stream now. Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Into the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard, Hugh Keevans with me, Andrew McLean. You can join us as well. 0141 951 1025. Whatever is on your mind, give us a call. You can tweet us as well at Clyde SSB. We are on throughout the summer with UK Debt Expert. They've helped over 250,000 people in the UK deal with debt. That's about five times the capacity of Hampden, 45,000 of which are right here in Scotland. So if you're struggling with debt you cannot control, talk to UK Debt Expert. There is a solution for you. You can find them at ukdebtexpert.co.uk. Let's hear a bit from Conor Barron, shall we? Speaking today as a Rangers player for the first time, saying there was only one club he wanted to join this summer. He's also not bothered by any negative reaction from Aberdeen fans.
No, Luke, you've got, as a player, you've got to do things for yourself sometimes, and you've got to do what's best for your career at the right time. I pay my thanks to Aberdeen. They've obviously brought me up from a boy into player I am today, so I thank them for everything that they've done to help me get here in my career. But as I say, it's the next chapter of my career now is Rangers Football Club, and can't wait to get going. To be honest, I haven't seen anything. All I do is focus on my job on the pitch, and I don't go on social media or anything like that. That's not my job. My job is to go out on the pitch and perform and let the football do the talking. Yeah, it doesn't get to me. Not at all. Doesn't get to me. When you're at the size of a club like Rangers, that can't get into your head. If it does, then there's a problem.
I think towards the tail end of the season, there maybe were a few Rangers players that were getting criticism for their social media activity from fans. It tends to happen, doesn't it, when a team aren't delivering on the pitch, they're not winning the trophies that the fans expect. Probably, I think a few Rangers fans will be happy to hear that Conor Barron says, you know, social media is not his thing. He's not taking any notice of that. I'm not paid to do that. I'm paid to go out and perform.
But that's enough about Todd Cantwell. that's the sensible point of view to take from Conor Barron. Ignore it entirely. You see the England over at the Euros, and they pay far too much attention to who says what on social media. Just go on with the game. As for the hostility between Aberdeen and Rangers, it's been there for decades. And, you know, Ryan Jack suffered when he went to Rangers. And, you know, Conor, when he goes back to Pittodrie, will get the same treatment. But again, that's fine. You know, fans will vent their anger, but that will happen for a variety of reasons at a variety of grounds. It's Scotland. It's the national pastime. You just have to deal with it.
It's probably how you channel it as well, because you see some players that thrive in those environments where they might be getting a bit of abuse from opposition fans. If you can channel it the right way and you can use it in a positive sense and try and, you know, get your revenge on the pitch type of thing, that sounds as if that's what Conor Barron will be wanting to do if any of that comes his way.
Again, as long as the fans keep it within the bounds of reason. If you boo somebody because they used to play for you and then went off to play for the team that you like least of all, then okay, you can vent your feelings as long as you keep it, as I say, within the bounds of reason.
Well, let's hear from you. 01419511025, or you can send us a tweet at ClydeSSB as well. But we do like hearing from you on the phone. So 01419511025. Just on Conor Barron, what do you make of the signing? We don't know what the fee is yet, as we said earlier on, because that still needs to be agreed, whether it's between the clubs or a tribunal. But young Scottish midfielder, he was on the cusp of the Scotland squad for the Euros as well. He was, as far as I'm aware, you know, pretty close to actually getting in Steve Clarke's squad. Wasn't really playing as much towards the start of the season at Aberdeen, came into it more towards the end.
It's always good to retain some form of Scottish identity, because the players that are coming in over the summer are foreign, and that's entirely Rangers' prerogative and Philippe Clarke's prerogative, but it's always good to have a Scottish identity about the team as well. He's got a lot to do. You know, this whole business about the stadium redevelopment, putting Rangers out at probably Murrayfield for their home games is not a good start when you're trying to bed in players like Conor Barron and the others who have arrived. Rangers have to hope that the delay in getting back to Ibrox on match days isn't extended. But this is all about Philippe Clement's judgment. Now, he thought there was a chance of winning the title. It all went horribly wrong for him one day in Inverness, or Dingwall rather, and one night in Dundee, and the Rangers never recovered. Brendan Rodgers brought all his experience to bear, and Rangers have a big season coming up, and you've got to hope that Barron and the others can immediately rise to the occasion.
I'm just imagining some of the players coming in at Rangers and they're shown around the stadium for the first time. They get their photos with a scarf above the head. This is where you'll be playing your football. Then all of a sudden your first home game is 50 miles across the M8 at a rugby stadium.
I think the Rangers fans will turn out in immense numbers. There'll be plenty of moaning about the season tickets, and as I've said earlier on, justifiably so. You buy a season ticket for a certain number of home games and you're not getting them. But the Rangers fans will want to ensure that Rangers, beginning as they are at Tynecastle, and that's a heck of a start, they'll want to ensure that Rangers have done no damage by the time they get to Celtic Park on the 31st of August.
Yeah, I'm sure that's not the last we'll have heard of that. We'll be back next week with plenty more talk, I'm sure. Let's go back to the phones. Bill is in East Kilbride. How are you, Bill?
I'm fine, thank you.
What have you got for us tonight? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm just a bit concerned. I'm listening to the phone in most nights, and this week, talking about the Scotland situation, I hear quite a few of the pundits talking about things are going to change. I think Steve Clarke has proved that he's not going to change, and that's part of the problem. He's of a mindset to me that he seems to set out not to lose games as opposed to trying to win games. And I'm no football expert, but his tactics, his substitutions, his mindset, I didn't like the way that he lambasted the referee. I agree, I don't think it was a penalty either. So trying to hinge the whole thing, a failure on a bad referee decision, is not good, and it's not a good look as far as he's concerned, I don't think.
Yeah, is that the challenge now, that people will be watching very closely? If Steve Clarke stays in the Scotland job, you know, he may have a decision to make on that. He may well not be thinking about it at all when he's just preparing for the next games coming up, but people will have a close eye on exactly how he approaches these games because he's been criticised for the way he approached a couple of the games at the Euros. I'm sure there will be a keen eye on exactly how he lines his team up, how the mentality of the team is, how they're set up. That will be a big one, won't it?
I described him, Steve Clarke, as risk averse, and I believe that is the case. And Bill agrees with me because he sees a manager who is more intent on not losing a goal than he is on scoring one. The Germany game, I never thought for one second that Scotland would get anything out of that. The host nation in Munich, first game of the tournament, and they are much better than Scotland. I just think that the overall picture is that people look at a manager who had seven English Premier League players in his team and who didn't get enough out of them. And there was nothing that was right about us against Germany or Hungary. A little better against Switzerland, but you know, VAR had to intervene a couple of times, and in the business of going toe-to-toe, Switzerland were landing more blows on us than we were on them. I think there is a cause for concern where the squad is headed, who is in charge of the squad, and what level of progress we can make going forward.
There have been, of course, some good times under Steve Clarke. Scotland have qualified for two major tournaments that we hadn't done in 20-odd years. There's been some big wins against big teams, especially this time last year. You look at some of the results early in qualifying. Do you not think Steve Clarke's capable of getting Scotland back to that level at all, Bill?
No, well, see if we just take the three games very quickly. Steve Clarke said all along that we wouldn't get anything out of the Germany game. Now, if he thought that, why did he set up the way he did? Why did he not say to the players, look, go out there, 20, 30 minutes, give it a go. If we're two or three down, right, OK, we'll have tactics, we'll pull back, we'll make the score too embarrassing. He also didn't play Billy Gilmour in the first game, and I think that Steve Clarke probably thought, wee Billy, big Germans. Now, the trouble is, it's wee Billy, but wee Billy's got a very big footballing brain, and I think he should have been in there from the start. The second game against Sweden, we pressed him. What happened? They started to make mistakes. We came away with a one each draw and a bit of hope for the last game, and lo and behold, we decided that we were going to play over 60s walking football for the first 25 minutes. It was a big letdown, and let's be honest about it, Steve Clarke gets pretty well rewarded for what he does, but the boys went away and the girls went away to Germany and spent millions, tens of millions of pounds putting it into the German economy, and the team came away, I would imagine, each of them feeling that they didn't give their best because they weren't allowed to give their best. I don't think it's the players' fault. I've got to say, the guy did a decent job of getting us there, and well done to him for that, but it's time to move on.
Well, thank you very much to Bill. That is the final point of the night, the final point of the week, but I'm back on Monday night with Roger Hanna here on Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Remember, you can catch up with the show, listen back wherever you get your podcasts as well. You can watch the whole thing back on YouTube, Twitter and Facebook as well by searching Clyde One SSB. Thank you to Hugh Keevans. Thank you for listening in, for your calls and your tweets, but stay right there. The GBX with George Bowie is up next.